Welcome back. Our guest this week is Dr. Dan Hurley, who is the CEO of the Michigan Association of State Universities, and he's concerned about their budgets. Our lead story, the aftermath of that decision to shut down the prosecutions in Flint and start again. On the OTR panel, Jonathan Osteen, Emily Lawler, and Chad Livengood sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs, with nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors. Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to our program. Top question off the top of the show. If we were to pick the top newsmaker in this town since the first of the year, who would that person be, Mr. Osteen?
Dana Nessel.
I would also go with Dana Nessel.
Attorney General Dana Nessel.
Let's make it unanimous. Isn't that an amazing thing? All right, and part of the reason is she's making news every time she turns around. In the news last week, when we put the show in the can, this popped. The prosecution in Flint ends and a new one begins. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. That was shocking. I would say maybe the news of the week, definitely the news of the week, probably the news of the month, maybe the news of the year. I guess we'll see. But basically starting over on the Flint investigations. I guess they had some problems with evidence collection and are going back to the drawing board on that, which is huge. I mean, I think we've spent $30 million both defending and prosecuting those cases.
3 years in the making. When you heard that story, what did you first think?
Well, first of all, Tim, before I came here this morning, I checked with the Attorney General's office to make sure that they weren't going to do anything new.
Thank you. Since
we're taping here on Thursday.
I appreciate
just
that.
Just for precautions again. Fadwa Hamoud, the Solicitor General, when she had this big press conference in February, she said there may be charges dismissed. She made it kind of clear in her opening commentary when she was taking over the case and she was getting Kim Worthy, the Wayne County prosecutor, involved in the case, that there could be some major changes coming. At the time also, she said they were keeping Todd Flood, the special prosecutor that Bill Schuette had hired, for his institutional knowledge. And I questioned her and said, well, this looks like a restart. And she said, no, it's not a restart. Well, yeah, now it actually is a restart.
Yeah. All right. So why are they restarting?
A couple reasons. A, they say they've obtained a bunch of new evidence. Now, a lot of this...
20 million pieces of evidence.
Sure. A lot of this, we don't know if it's material. We don't know exactly what Todd Flood may have already reviewed and what he may have not. Most of this evidence was stuff that the state actually had in its possession already. Of course, a couple weeks ago, the Attorney General's office obtained a subpoena to... confiscate evidence from itself, from a different part of the Attorney General's office, a search warrant, there's been a lot of public consternation coming out of Hamoud and her special counsel's team about, what they have, what they know, and how much more they need to do. Of course, this all comes as two of the biggest cases were headed towards trial, and perhaps, the prosecution wasn't ready to go to trial yet and decided to take this pretty dramatic step to reboot the whole thing.
They didn't want to own Bill Schuette's charges and Bill Schuette's cases. That's what it came down to. They wanted to have their own, conclusions and legal theories, and they just didn't agree with where Schuette's team had gone.
All right, so eight people are off the hook, are they? Nick Lyon, okay. We're dropping the charges. Dr. Eden Wells dropping the charges. But now Dana Nessel didn't make this decision, but she has endorsed it. Okay, this was from the criminal side of the prosecution. She's on the civil side, but she's all in and warned everybody, you may be off the hook now, but you could be back on the hook later on.
Yeah, and some state employees are going back to work, actually, I think as soon as next week. The ball is kind of rolling here. I think that for the last 3 years, the people of Flint have had a really clear picture of what they would envision as justice. And now that whole picture has been scattered across the board. It's a puzzle. They're putting it back together. Who knows which pieces are going to come back in which places? Who knows what justice looks like for Flint at this juncture?
Yeah, a lot of people I talked to in Flint who probably had, looked forward to a change in the administration, maybe supported Dana Nessel, were very very frustrated by this announcement last week. They've wanted to see some sort of finality to this, or some sort of, you know, somebody punished for this. Obviously, only I think one person has been fired in total through this. One other person resigned. So they were looking forward to a closure in at least one of these high-profile criminal cases. And certainly, while that may still happen down the line, it's going to be delayed for quite a while.
I found it interesting that they're waiting till June 28th to go into Flint to explain that what they were doing. I'm not sure that should have been done a little earlier.
Well, so they made this say we're going to show up in Flint in 15 days and explain ourselves, and then the next day the attorney general goes out on public radio in Detroit to basically start explaining why they're doing that and try to defend the decision, even though she has removed herself from the criminal cases so she can handle the civil cases, right? Because there is a looming multiple millions of dollar lawsuit, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars possibly, this hanging out there against the state over how it handled things. And she's out trying to get a settlement. Whether Flint residents will see, you know, feel like they got justice if they get a big settlement in the civil cases, kind of remains to be seen. But there are people in Flint, activists, who want to see certain high-level officials from the previous administration in handcuffs.
She said justice delayed is not justice denied necessarily. So basically, Flint, be patient. And as you all suggest, the Flint people, I think their patience has sort of run out.
Yeah.
So we reboot the whole thing.
That 15-day waiting period you mentioned before they're coming in to explain it to the community, I talked to one activist who said that's just 15 days where we're swinging in the breeze. Uncertainty, we don't know what's going on. So obviously the attorney general, as Chad said, is on the other side of the conflict wall. She has said that she didn't learn about this decision until shortly before it was announced either, but she was clearly out trying to wage a public relations campaign on Friday to try and calm some nerves while folks in Flint wait 2 weeks to actually hear an explanation from the prosecutors.
We also heard from Todd Flood and Andy Arena. Bill Schuette did a statement that was kind of pablum and didn't really get into the essence of the thing, but the other two guys were saying, hey, you know, we don't mind you doing this. Arena's line was, we don't mind you, this is her right to do this, but don't trash my reputation while you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was the team that Schuette had handpicked to handle this case. It went more slowly, I think, than a lot of people were expecting. But I guess that's kind of the risk you run when you bridge it between two administrations in the AG's office.
All right, let's talk about teacher salaries. They were in town this week, and they were loud, and they were asking for, guess what? More moolah. The march on the Capitol by teachers and others is timely in that the Republican legislature is now debating how much to spend on the K-12 budget next year. Here's the governor's number.
It is time to take Michigan from 50th to top 10, and it starts with $500 million back in the school aid fund.
The governor's proposed increase is the biggest increase in years. Over 1,000 demonstrators here on the Capitol steps protesting the need for more money from the Republican legislature. But some Republicans are telling these teachers there's only so much money we can give you.
Everyone wants more. I would like more. But, you know, it's up to the Michigan economy. We can't ask Michigan families, taxpayers, just to keep paying more and more and more if they don't have it. And so, as I said, as the economy's gotten better, we're putting more money into education.
So you're doing the best you can.
We're doing the best we can.
But for some in the crowd, that's not good enough.
It's never enough. The kids are struggling with things at home, and they're coming to school, and we need as much support as we can get.
I was making more money 10 years ago than I'm making today, and I'm fed up with it.
The governor is frustrated too.
These teachers work hard. We've got school districts that are starting their budgets in just 2 weeks, and there's no conclusion in the near future, and I think that we're doing everyone a disservice by not staying here and getting the work done.
She and key Republicans are about $200 million apart. And this Republican reports you could get to $500 million, but it would be, in his words, painful.
It would be, however, painful, depending on where you looked in the budget.
You'd have to cut somebody else.
You'd have to cut somebody, and the thing about dollars is everybody wants to cut waste until it's my waste. And then people don't want to cut that.
The governor reports budget negotiations on K-12 continue, but demonstrators are hoping showing up here will help her get more for them. We'll know by the end of the month if they'll get more. Emily, is she going to get $500 million?
Hard to say. She's pitching this. This is part of her budget one lever plan, where you take one tough vote, you raise the gas tax, you backfill some stuff, you do some dominoes, and you come out with some more money for education.
Crickets in the legislature on that.
Unfortunately, it seems like the legislature is not really on board with that plan as it is. But I think that they are kind of coming up with their own solutions. Nobody's proposing to cut education at this point. I think that there's been a continued investment in education over the last several budget cycles. I don't expect that to break that pattern anytime soon.
Yeah, one thing that's kind of lost in all this budget discussion on the school aid fund is there's over $2 billion being dedicated to teacher pensions. And this is the budgetary priority that Rick Snyder and the past legislature set up. Basically, instead of sending the money to the schools and having the schools pay their ever-rising bill to the MPSRS pension system, the state is simply paying into the system themselves and prepaying into their retiree health care to try to draw down this massive unfunded liability. Now, the problem, the disconnect, is that the teachers aren't feeling it in the classroom. The Republicans can say, we've been, education funding's been going like this for years, but it's not necessarily showing up in the classroom because they're paying for their pensions and helping out, stopping a real big turmoil in that system.
And the other part of that story now this week is that now some Mr. Shirky by name is looking at that fund and not paying it down and putting it into the roads. The teachers are really, really geeked about that.
Yeah, we don't know enough about how that would work, securitization.
We've been here before.
It's bonding, basically. It's trying to basically spread out the payment by borrowing money. Now, they've encouraged county governments to do this. I will remind policymakers, this is what Detroit did. Kwame Kilpatrick borrowed $1.4 billion, and then the stock market made it all disappear in the crash in 2008 and 2009, and then Detroit ended up in bankruptcy. Basically, the state is now kind of encouraging municipalities to do this. Now they're exploring whether to do this with the MPSR system so they can lower their own upfront costs right now, spread it out, and free up money for roads and maybe for classrooms.
Going back to Emily's comment at the beginning, this is all wrapped up in a budget from the governor that presupposes a $2.5 billion increase in gas taxes over 2 years, which obviously the Republican legislature isn't going to do. Now, whatever other road funding plan they come up with, we'll see, and how that impacts how much money is left over for other areas of the budget, we'll see. But even some teachers I talked to, were like, well, that kind of gas tax would be tough, but we think it's worth it. But if these people who are directly impacted by the budget are on the fence about that, it's probably still a tough sell for the rest of the public.
I would say that education by itself isn't, they're not terribly far apart on that. When you're talking about $200, $300, yep, $400, even $500 million in the context of an almost $15 billion budget, it's not terribly, terribly far apart, but I think it's the lever that throws everyone else off. How are you going to get the money in
Whitmer's
there?
Budget, of course, does. It puts more than $500 into classrooms, and it does so by moving the state towards a weighted funding formula, which is another part of the debate here.
Yep.
The per pupil funding increase, the base level is pretty similar across the House, Senate, and governor, but she's proposing extra for at-risk students, for special ed students, for career tech ed students. That traditionally costs more to educate. The education community is very excited about that idea, but neither the House or Senate have followed up with that idea in their own budget.
The thing with the budget, if you look at each budget individually, they're easy to solve, but it's not individual. It's everything on the table at the same time. All right, let's talk about higher education funding. Dr. Dan Hurley is CEO of the Michigan Association of State Universities, representing all 15 university presidents. He rejoined the group in 2015 after being with them from 2003 to 2007. His PhD is from Western, his MA from Ferris State, and his BA from Grand Valley.
Be with you all.
Doc, good to see you. Let's see what Jonathan's got on his mind.
So we are talking a lot about the budget. The governor did propose a 3% increase, I believe, for university operations. The House and Senate have each proposed considerably less than that. What's your take on how higher education funding would be funded under these scenarios?
Well, as in years past, there's a lot of machinations. It could be certainly lengthen the process this year, and we'll probably end up somewhere in the middle. We certainly hope that we'll be ultimately closer to where the governor's proposal was. We need to do that. We need to make higher education an investment priority.
The former governor, Rick Snyder, early in his tenure, did cut higher education funding. It's slowly been rebounding. Where are we at now compared to 2011, 2012 levels?
Still below it by about $36 million when you factor in inflation. More importantly, we've been disinvesting as a state for about 30 years when you just factor in appropriately inflation. We're $1 billion below where we were in 2001 in terms of state investment in higher ed. And that is essentially meant a cost shift in who pays for a public university education in Michigan, going from the states to students.
So what does that say about the legislature's attitude towards your business?
It's certainly not an investment priority. We fund K-12 often talks about per student funding. We don't do that as much in higher ed. But for some perspective, in Michigan, we fund our students at the public universities one half of the national average. Back in the 80s, the state paid 75% of what it costs to put a student through a university. Now we're down to 22%.
What have universities done specifically to really kind of lower their costs to try to do anything to consolidate operations and have a little more uniformity across the state?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of collaboration taking place. I could certainly speak about that, but they have been cutting. They don't wear it on the sleeves as much.
Maybe you should.
I love my job. I represent, work on behalf of 15 of the best public universities, not just in this nation, but I think around the world. And quality is a big part of that. Cost is an important aspect, but they have very high quality, and there's a balance there. But there, Chad, to your question, they've brought on new, really market-responsive academic programs. What you don't hear about is they jettison a lot of academic programs. Most of the work has been done kind of on the business side of the enterprise. All the schools collaborate on group purchasing, especially around healthcare. That obviously is a big deal. About 80% of all the expenditures are human resource related. We have a very high talent pool with professors, researchers, scientists, et cetera. But what we try to do is protect the academic core, so we have high quality academic programs. And then they've actually been reallocating a lot of resources on the campus, focusing in on student services. All of our institutions have increased, for example, student retention and degree completion. Wayne State, hats off to them. They were the number one university in the country last year in terms of their improvement in the graduation rate. So that gives you a little bit of a flavor on cost cutting.
The past handful of budgets have included tuition restraints for universities where you can't go above X percent or risk losing some funding. How sustainable is that over the long term? Is that something that if it's in the budget for a decade, two decades, is going to lead to major problems?
I think so. It may already have. And it's especially hard when you look at, for example, the House recommending a 0.4% increase on one hand, and again, that is just a fraction of the revenues that fund these institutions, and then you cap their other primary revenue stream, something has to give there. And it limits flexibility. The universities are very cost conscious. They know that affordability is absolutely critical. Especially for low-income students, first-generation students. And so they want to keep college affordable and accessible, but they also need to invest strategically in new academic programs and student services. And where the state has kind of abandoned its role of making sure that our public universities are publicly accessible to all residents, we've had the institutions have stepped up and are spending hundreds of millions of dollars and institutional need-based student financial aid.
Doctor, in the meetings that you've had with the presidents, how deep of a dive have you all done together as a group into the sexual abuse problem on campuses?
Very deep dive. I tell you, this has been an issue in American higher education for many years. Certainly, what's transpired in the last couple of years here in Michigan has really redoubled everyone's efforts across the university enterprise to make sure that our campuses businesses as safe as they possibly can be. When there is an incident, that it is responded to quickly, that the adjudication process is fast, it's fair to all involved.
Do you think the president of the U of M ought to be called into court to testify or be available on the case that's pending there?
I haven't been deeply engaged in that issue, but there is a tremendous...
It's not that deep. It's a transparency issue,
yeah,
isn't it?
There is. I think I haven't gotten deeply engaged in that. I think there's a little bit of showboating perhaps going on there.
By whom?
Not the institution. I think it makes sense to have the experts who are most engaged in that issue speak to that issue.
Showboating by whom, sir?
I think that the university has presented everything that they can, and I don't think that is necessary that the president need to be deeply engaged in these issues. Turn it over to the subject experts that who can speak to the issues at hand around that issue.
So the showboating is by the prosecution, is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, I don't think it's necessary.
Why is it so tough to answer? I don't get that. You used the term, and now I'm trying to find out who used it, and you won't tell me.
I just think there's some public antics at play that, you know, not by the institution. The institution is doing its job. It's one of the safest schools out there.
Yeah. Public antics? Who's that? The movement? The Me Too folks?
No, my goodness, no.
All right, well, then help me out here, please, Doc.
I mean, maybe the judge who I think said I have not been deeply engaged in the issue, but maybe the judge who's been pressing this issue so much.
Dan, given the state's current demographics, the declining number of kids coming out of high school, and just the pipeline to supply the customers for your businesses is in decline, should we be reevaluating whether we need 15 universities and whether we really even can support 15 universities? Lake State University has fewer than 2,000 kids now. Why is there not a serious discussion underway to have Lake State University merge with Northern Michigan University?
So thanks for the question. It does get asked once in a while. I view that as sort of a defeatist type orientation. I think any community, any state, any society that has a graying population to just simply retrench, consolidate, is not good from a prosperity standpoint, economically, civically, socially. There is a tremendous amount that the universities can do and are doing to address that. Lake Superior State, for example, and even Northern Michigan University had an enrollment increase last year. So the universities, one thing we can do is increase college going in the state. That's a hard dial to move, but it can be done. There's a lot of movement around that. Increasing student retention, increasing degree completion, reaching out to working adults. You hear about the governor trying to, with her Michigan Reconnect program, working on that. We're a magnet state for college-bound students, so bringing students out of state and internationally. We're a top 10 state in the nation in that. That's six different buckets to pull from that I think can help counter the fact that we have a diminishing pipeline of traditional high school graduates.
You know, you're trying to pull people in. At the same time, the messaging from the state is not everyone needs to go to college. You know, look at these skilled trades. We need people to fill these jobs. How is that affecting enrollment in your work?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. We ask it ourselves a lot. The bottom line is the message needs to be in order to achieve a middle class lifestyle, everyone should achieve some type of post-secondary degree or credential. And obviously, the more you learn, the more you earn greater job security. But I do think over the last many years, there has been a very strong focus on the skilled trades. That's fine, but the fact is the state's own labor market forecast shows when you look at the top 50 high-wage, high-demand jobs for the next 6 or 8 years, 36 require minimally a four-year degree. So that messaging, whether it's from policymakers, leaders, business leaders, is actually not kind of reflective of the state's own labor market forecast.
You talked about Michigan universities being focused on affordability, but we know that college is still unaffordable for a lot of people. If they do make it through, people are saddled with student loan debt that can take years, decades even, to pay off. What can the state, as policymakers in this state, do right now to actually impact affordability at the universities?
Invest. We've been disinvesting for years. Even, for example, last 7 years, there have been modest increases in state operating support for universities after the big 15% cut in year one of the Governor Snyder administration. But those have been very modest, sometimes below inflation. So we're still losing ground. And to the prior conversation you all had, higher education nationally and in Michigan has often served as a balancing wheel of state budgets. That needs to stop. The primary message to policymakers is there's an absolute correlation between investment in the universities and tuition costs, and the fact that there's a huge relationship between a state's educational attainment level and per capita income across the board. We're 35th in educational attainment. We're 30th in per capita income. We need to invest more, make college more affordable, increase our attainment, and with that, we will increase our
earnings. I suffer from the standpoint that your message gets lost in all the debate about gas taxes, about all the other stuff that's going on. I don't hear anybody in the legislature say, boy, we got to help those college presidents.
I think it's out there, but it certainly needs to be stronger. There are champions, and I love the missions of these public universities, but overarchingly, they serve as the workforce development asset.
So who's the one lawmaker that you go to and say, we need you to say something about us?
I would say it's really about the leadership roles. It's about the appropriations chairs, the Senate Majority Leader, the Speaker of the House, our subcommittee chairs, so all of them. From our viewpoint, we're agnostic. It's a nonpartisan issue. It should be.
Thank you, Dr. Hurley. It's good to see you.
You bet.
All right, thanks, guys. Next week, the Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court will be sitting right there.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs, with nearly 3 decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors. Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.